Welcome to the podcast of Story Story Night. Story Story Night is a live storytelling program in Boise, Idaho, inspired by The Moth. More information can be found at storystorynight.org. Today's first story is by Phil Atlaxon and was recorded at the live event on the 22nd of March, 2010, at the Sunray Cafe in Boise. Phil shares a story of a skiing adventure and relationship gone awry.
Hi, I'm Phil Atlaxon. When Hollis Welch asked me if I would do this, I have to confess, I was reluctant. It sounded dangerously like stand-up comedy. And I consider stand-up to be about the scariest thing in human experience. So I thought what I should do is tell you a story that is not funny. It might have been funny if it happened to somebody else, but it happened to me, so this is not funny. The only excuse I have is that this happened a long time ago. I was a student in Seattle at University of Washington School of Drama, living in North Seattle in a house. And a little house next door that was vacant my first several years, a couple moved in. And I went over, introduced myself, and got to talking to the guy there. And in fact, he did all the talking. He was just, you know, he's one of these guys you meet, and he just carries the whole conversation. Really nice guy. But it turns out he was also starting as a student at the School of Drama, same as me. So I said, well, let's carpool. You know, I mean, it just makes sense. And so we start doing that every day. We get, you know, my car, and we drive, and we were going at about 9 o'clock in the morning, but somehow he would talk so much, it always felt like about 6 in the morning, like I wasn't quite awake enough for the intensity of this guy, because he just was alive. He had so much energy and talking, and when he would notice that I'm just sitting there driving, he was like, so how's the weather over there? And sort of try to draw me out. And, you know, I just wanted to drive, and I didn't mind listening to him. But the stories tended to be all about him, and he was the hero, and it all worked out, and everything was about him winning, and if he tried to do something, it came out better than he expected, and it just wore a little thin. So we did this for a number of days, and I told my wife about this guy, and she's like, oh, you should have them come over. They should come over for dinner. It's like, oh, yeah, he's actually really nice. He has lots of stories. And so he comes over, and we're having dinner, and he's talking. He's just really, he's dominating the whole thing. And, you know, I actually just start looking for ways to try to open it up a little bit. And he's talking about skiing, and I say, oh, you know, I didn't know it, but I'm a Flatlander. I grew up in the Midwest. I didn't know in mountain states they have names for me. But I'm just learning, and, you know, and I really enjoy. He's like, yeah, you know, like, you know, I'm pretty good. So I said, well, you know, I was at Mount Baker not that long ago. Have you ever been? Oh, yeah, I've been to Mount Baker. I said, you know, like, the thing is, like, you look at the face of the mountain, and it's just like, it's rock, and there'd be like this ribbon of white, and a skier will go down that ribbon. He's like, yeah, I've done that. You've skied that? Oh, yeah. No, I've skied. Not there, but I've skied that kind. Yeah, you know, the rock with the ribbon. Yeah, I've skied that. You're kidding me. And my wife is like kicking me under the table. She's like, Phil, if he says he did it, I know. No, I'm just saying, that is amazing. I mean, you should be in the Olympics. He's like, yeah, well, probably. You know, I was like, all right, wow. Hey, you know, next time we get the chance to go skiing, I mean, let's do it because I'm, you know, I love it. I'm, yeah. So we do. We get a chance. We have a break from school. We decide we're going to go to Mount Baker because I told him how incredible it was. And I don't know if you know where that's at. It's near the Canadian border. It's about 85 miles, if I remember correctly. It's quite a drive. So we have to get up early. We drive all the way there. And I'm thinking, because we've now lost, you know, an hour or so since it opened because, you know, the long drive. I said, you know, why don't we just head over to the backside, which involves, you know, taking a lift, going down that side, and then taking a really long lift. It's a mile and a half on that lift. And he's like, sure, let's do it. You know, so we go over. We get on the really long lift. And when you get about halfway, it's a long way down there, you know. And so he's sitting there. I look over at him, and he seems kind of tense. And he's, like, grabbing the pole. I'm like, wow, it's really high up. I said, well, yeah, I know. I mean, it's a mile and a half, but then it's a lot more than that coming down. So it's like you get a nice long run. Like, yeah, I can believe it. I thought, well, you know, he has a fear of heights or something. And so we get to the top, and I mean, he doesn't say anything. He just takes off, just like gone. And I'm having to like go after him, chase him, like, hey, slow down. He's going to cross the ridge of the mountain. And it goes across for a little ways, and then it turns. But Greg, who's in front of me, and I'm trying to catch up with him, is not turning. He's going straight for the edge. And then I watch him go over the edge, and the last I see him, he is going head first, like a Roadrunner cartoon, down. And I just start laughing. I mean, it only seemed like something I'd seen, you know, in cartoon characters. You know, but I ski over to the edge, and I look down, and he is just in a tumble down there, and his skis are everywhere, and he's stuck in the snow, and he's, like, hit a couple of times, and, you know, he's like, help, you know, and it's like, yeah, okay, you know, so I take off, you know, and I'm skiing. I'm getting my first real run of the day, and I'm thinking, this is not how I want to do it. I mean, this is an emergency. I didn't want to be skiing like this to save somebody's life. You know, so I ski down, I get on the lift, go over there, and then go down to the other side so I can get to the lodge. And I was like, we need ski patrol. My friend went over the edge. Where? It's like at the very top. Oh, you know, so I go back. They take forever, you know, but I go back and I'm like, they're coming. Finally, they show up. I don't know if you've ever seen this. I've never seen it, but it looks like half a mummy case, you know, without the top half, but it's shaped like a human being. And they basically have to climb down, you know, with mountain climbing stuff, hoist him up. You can't imagine how long this is taking. Because I'm just like, we're getting a lot of not skiing in here today. You know? And they finally get him up, and they get him in there, and they strap him down like he's completely, and they had determined that he had some kind of fracture, so they put him in a splint. So that was it for him for skiing. And it was a little bit icy that day. And like I say, we were at the very top. They had two ski patrol. One takes a rope from the head going that way, and the other at the feet going that way. And they're taking him down the mountain this way. But we don't get very far before the ice is starting to affect this whole maneuver. And I'm kind of skiing along beside him. He's here, you know, and he's like not very happy about this. And the guy up at the top, I look, notice, and he's like, whoa, you know, he's like trying to corral this thing, you know, and he slips and he drops the rope. And Greg comes whizzing past me like this, and he's going, ah, you know, just going like flying past me. And again, it's like, I start laughing so hard, I have to stop skiing. He goes past me down below the bottom guy, and the bottom guy's like, yeah, you know, and like grinding this thing to a halt, you know, and by the time they get him stopped, I catch up with him, and Greg is just, you know, traumatized. His eyes are this big. He's like, oh my God, you know, and they're like, sorry, okay, we're mostly down now, you know, and so we get down, but of course, we're still on the backside. We have to go onto a lift. So they start putting him on a lift to go back to the front side, you know, to go to the lodge where they're going to take care of him. And I'm watching, you know, they have to stop the whole chairlift to strap him onto this thing. And I'm like, you know, by the time they get him on there, I could probably go up and like get a run in, you know? So I do. I hop off this chair and I go up really fast, you know? And it's fast, you know, so I ski down, you know? And when I get down, they're not there, but I'm thinking, okay, they would probably just be arriving at the lodge now. That means he's probably they're gonna put a cast on him, and I could get another run in. You know, so I get on the chair and I go up and I take another run. And when I get to the bottom, I'm thinking, okay. But we haven't had lunch, so maybe I could get lunch. Or if I just don't have lunch, I could do another run. So I go do another run. And when I get down to that one, I'm thinking, okay, well, when he gets done, he's going to have lunch. He hasn't eaten. And if he's already had those things, he could just sit there. Because really, if he hadn't been talking the way he had, you know, we would never have been in this situation anyway. So I'll just go, he can just wait for me. You know, he's going to be sitting by some, you know, roaring fire, you know, with hot cocoa and waiting for me, you know. So I get on the chair one more time. I go up and I come down. Now, this is a pretty long run. So it's actually now the day is almost over. And I decide, you know, I need to go back and connect with Greg and we need to head home. So, you know, so I'm down. I go to, you know, go up the lift, go down the front side, get to the lodge. I go into the area and it has the big roaring fire, just like I imagined, but no Greg. Well, he's probably still eating. So I go to the cafeteria. No Greg. So I ask somebody, okay, well, where's your clinic? They're like, what clinic? You know, like my friend has a broken leg. Well, I don't know, but we don't have a clinic. Oh. Well, where would they put him? Like, well, why aren't you with him? Well, I was skiing. So I go outside the lodge, and out there is like, kind of like an outhouse without a toilet in it. It's just, it doesn't even have a door on it. It's just really not even a protection from anything except to be seen. You know, and he's, and I come around the corner and he's sitting there. He has been sitting there for hours and he's just like, where were you? He's waiting to go to the hospital. And we get in the car. And I try to explain to him, as if it were an apology, that it was really all his fault. He should never have been talking about what a great skier he was, because probably he'd never skied before in his life from what I saw. And he didn't say anything. And for the first time since I'd known the guy, all I could think of is I wish he would say something. But here's the terrible thing. I don't remember ever having him talk to me again after that. That was it.
Our next storyteller is Hollis Welsh, also recorded on the 22nd of March 2010 at the Sunray Cafe in Boise. Hollis tells of an unexpected acting job.
So mine involves a lot of shame and humiliation, so I'm really happy that this is being recorded for potential, you know, broadcast. So I'm an actress, yes, and I've lived in L.A. and New York, and when you're in L.A., you're looking for work, you know, and any work is like work in L.A. as an actress. So I was taking an acting class, and there was a producer, a friend of the guy who was running the class, who took a liking to me. And he said, well, why don't you be in this movie? I'm doing these movies, you know, I'm doing these movies. And there's this role that's totally like, it's just like helping the story along, you know, there's nothing to it. But you'd be great in it. You should do it. It pays. And I'm like, hell yes. Yay, I'm a paid actress. So I go, I do this movie. And they're like, okay, you show up at this warehouse. It's down by LAX, la, la, la. Here's the directions and stuff. So I go and I enter this building. And it's like this little lobby that's just like a ma and pa shop, whatever. You don't really know what the business is, you know. You just walk in and they're friendly and they greet you and it's, you know, shut down for the day for this movie. So we go in through the doors and suddenly it's not a ma and pa shop. It's a full-on sex, like, fantasy haven. And it literally has room after room after room after room of every kind of sexual fantasy you would want to live out for the night. And what you do is you go in and you go to the locker room, you totally strip down naked, and they give you a key to your locker with a little squeegee on your arm. So all you're wearing is your locker key. And then you proceed to go into the space and have crazy random sex for how, I don't know, for all night long. I don't know what the rules are when they open this place. Room after room. And I mean, my imagination didn't even go to the places. One room was this huge room. There was like an army hospital of bunk bed, like cots. And I mean, like bed after bed after bed. So you could go and act like being a soldier and having your cute nurse, you know, whatever. It's PG, right? So do whatever she's going to do to you. There was like the wall with the holes in it. So like you could stand behind the wall and like present yourself, and in front of the wall, some stranger could do whatever they'd want to do to you. There was like the S&M room up in the, you know, the cellar, up in the cellar, except upstairs. I mean, just like, you know, harem rooms. I mean, I don't even remember them. That's how in shock I was. So anyways, this movie was a soft porno, which I am in. And my storyline was some stupid, I was like the mobster girlfriend who was like, got kidnapped and I'm in photographs and stuff. But then I have this scene and my scene takes place with Mary Carey, who ran for mayor against Arnold Schwarzenegger. She's a porn star. She's in the background dancing on a pole in my scene. And I'm supposed to like, I have like two lines, you know, I turn out to be the bad girl who's like really deceptive. And so anyway, so at the end, they have you sign a release and they're like, what name do you want to use? And I'm like, name? Well, my name's Hollis Welsh. What do you mean name? My name. So they're all like, okay. So it's occurring to me that everyone's not using their real name. They all have fake names. So I thought, well, what? Okay. Anyways, I'm an true actress. I'm proud of the work I do. I'm going to use my real name. So fast forward, and I have an IMDb page suddenly. Like, I'm an official actress. And I have, like, two credits on it, and one is this freaking movie, okay, that I use my real name on. So there I am, and I'm, like, horrified, but I'm like, okay, it's fine. Okay, yeah, the name is, like, Misty Springs or something, the film, you know. Okay, it's questionable. Like, what kind of movie is this? But no one... So some freaking guy that I don't know sees the movie and writes a review of it on my page. So, and it says porno, like, all through the review. And so I'm now in a porno, and it's broadcast on my IMDb page, and there is no way to get that work up. I emailed them, and I said, this is work that I, you know, I just tried every avenue to get it off of my credits. And they're like, well, were you in the film? I'm like, yes, but. So there it is, remains on my IMDb page. So I moved to Boise and I'm involved in a theater company, and some guy that we hire comes up to me one day and says, pornos, huh? And so that's so it followed me to Boise, Idaho. I have been in a porno, but it's a soft porno. It's on Skinamax, apparently. I have not seen it, but I'm sure you can go find it if you want. That's my story.
The Story Night podcast is produced by Boise State Public Radio. Pledge your support at radio.boisestate.edu. Story Night is a monthly live storytelling program created and presented by Alley Repertory Theater, the Boise State University Story Initiative, and The Cabin. Story Night is inspired by The Moth. Music for Story Night is by Dan Costello. You can hear more at hearcostello.com. Thank you for listening.